Hey, how's it going? How you been? What's scrapping?
The weekly scratch, motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the weekly scraps. Yo, episode 62? I think so. We are rocking and rolling 2020. Big month coming up for us. The Law MMA crew, Sarah Longo Fight Team. This weekend, we actually got a couple of guys fighting out of Cage Fury, where I used to fight for. Yours truly used to be the champ over there, a couple time defending. No big deal. Brush the shoulder off. We got Nas. He's fighting over there. I don't think it's for a title. Not yet. But he's got a pretty big fight coming up February 1st. That's going to be out in PA. Then we have my brother who just got on the card in short notice as well for Cage Fury. And then on top of that, that happened about a week ago. And on top of that, now we have James Gonzalez. So we got Kelvin Sterling. He's having another amateur fight over there in PA. 145. PA is a little weird with the commission, with some of their rules. They like, so my brother's a 35 pounder. He fought 35 in his last fight. Wasn't the best performance. Didn't really do the weight cut the right way. And especially the rehydration. And it definitely showed, you know, living you learn. He didn't wrestle like my brother and I did when we were in high school. And my brother also wrestled middle school also, but he didn't do any of that. He didn't really play much sports at all, like organized team sports. But yeah, he had a tough weight cut. But now with PA, since he's fought at 45 before, he's actually fought at, I think, 55 before as well as an amateur. They won't let him go back down. It's super weird. He has to get like all these clearance stuff. So I'm telling him like, yo, let's just try to fight in other states where we can fight at the weight class that we want. Let's get you used to getting down to 135. He keeps talking about making his pro debut. And I'm like, dude, you got to get this weight cut down to a science before you take that to the pro ranks. You don't want to have these type of hiccups because your record is your record. You don't get to restart. There is no restart button once you make that jump over into the pro ranks. So hopefully we can hit your bag out a couple more fights for his amateur career, wrap that up, and get ready to go pro maybe at some point in early 2021. He is 30, turning 31 in March, so it's not like he has a ton of time. But, you know, I've seen worse. I've seen guys who've gone pro, like Jimmy Manuel, man, in late in his career, in his 30s, I want to say. And look, he made a crazy run in the UK scene and got to the UFC and got to the top of the division. So you never know. Now we have our other guy, James Gonzalez, who just got the fight like 3 days ago. He's fighting for the title, I think, against Pat Sabatini. And that's going to also be at 145. And his last fight before that was at 135. So he's taking a short notice fight, going up a weight class. Title fight, great opportunity. A tough dude who's also a pretty good grappler. James is a really good grappler. So I'm super excited about this one because I think he could go out there and get the upset that maybe a lot of those guys probably aren't paying attention to, but we call him the alley cat for a reason. James is back control, his top pressure. He's the alley cat for a reason. So he's one of the, for me, I always say it's a race to whoever can get top control, top position first. Then whoever's on bottom is going to get held down for at least 1 to 3 minutes, probably even longer than that sometimes, especially if James gets on my back or if I get on his back. So it's going to be very interesting. He's a high-level grappler, BJJ, sir, BJJ black belt. So I'm super excited to see his return because he hasn't fought in a while and see how much strides he's made in the learning department, because I've seen him in the gym all the time and I can't wait to see what he does out there for his next time out. Other than that, man, PT is going pretty well. I'm training with this new lady, working with this new lady. She's kind of training me. It's this facility over in New York City in downtown called Fusion. I think it's Fusion X. I'm just saying it's Fusion. It's downtown called Fusion. Really nice spot. I guess a lot of high profile people actually go there, which is pretty cool either way. I don't really give a shit about that, but it's cool to see that it's such a low key, because I never heard of it until my doctor actually recommended it. But it seems like it's very low key, but at the same time, it's well regarded in the eyes of people with, again, the higher profiles. So that's pretty cool to see that. Her name is Caroline. And she's been doing a pretty good number on my wrist so far. I mean, this is a lot better than what it was. It's getting there. And even when she's doing it actively, I'm getting more range than I was before. So today I'm supposed to be going back for an appointment at 1 o'clock. I can't wait to go. So I'm really just trying to ramp up the volume on this thing and see what we could do, how fast we could come back. The only thing is I kind of tweaked my shoulder sparring and going with these guys last week. I don't know what it was, but it's the one I actually had surgery on. So hopefully it's not a big deal. I'm going to ask her about it and see what she says and see if I can get an opinion. I would like to think it's probably because I'm doing a lot of grappling with one hand, dominating, trying to pull everything with this one side. So it's probably impinging on the front. I probably just need to retract the shoulders a little bit, do some of those exercises, my old band therapy workouts that I used to do for PT, and just get that, all those muscles backfiring, get them back into order. So it might not be that big of a deal, but it does fucking, it is sore. It is pretty goddamn sore. Man, the UFC Raleigh, I keep saying this wrong. UFC Raleigh. Great time. Got to hang out with my best friend, Enoch Maurice. Shout out to you, County Champ, Nassau County, Section 8, Section Great. We had a good time. I was only down there for a day and a half, more like a day. It wasn't too long of a trip. It was a quick weekend thing. Can't even call it a weekend because it was only one day. I left Saturday morning. Flight was at 8:30, touchdown at about 10:45. Yep. He picked me up. We went, got food, Cracker Barrel, hung out, got to hang out with the wife and the kids. And then went to the fights, took a little nap, went to the fights. And then we stayed out pretty much all night till about 1 o'clock, hanging, bullshitting at the Fighter Hotel. Got to hang out with Bisbing a little bit, Uriah Faber. And it was cool because I got to pick Uriah Faber's brain a bunch about the Petr Yan fight, because that is a fight that I'm gunning for. And it's probably, it is the next fight that I would like to have. And I am pushing for it. I did ask Sean Shelby when I saw him out there. He's the matchmaker for my weight division in the UFC. You have Mick Maynor, who's matchmaker for some of the other weights. They kind of like split almost like 50-50. I think Sean has more of the heavier load in terms of weight classes. He's got more weight classes in terms of that kind of load. Not the, you guys got to get your fucking head out of the gutter. I know what you guys are thinking. Not that kind of load, guys. Come on. So we got that coming up. So hopefully, I mean, he didn't seem like he was going to, he didn't really say he was going to make that matchup for sure, but it's going to be a combination of the top four guys, I would imagine. I'm not really sure which one of them he's going to give me yet, but if I had my choice of picking, it would definitely be Petr Yan. I think that's the fight the fans want to see. And whenever people talk about title implications, it's always Petr Yan and myself that are always the two top front runners for right now, at least. In terms of win streak, in terms of popularity, and in terms of just putting in the work, I think he's done a lot of good things. And then you also have Corey Sandhagen. He did beat a higher profile guy than Petr Yan has beaten, and Rafael Sunstyle, a guy who beat me by split decision, even though I still think I won the fight. But he did beat me by split decision. That's why I don't really understand this stuff when it's like Aldo lost by split, but he's getting the title shot. Like, it's like you lost, bro. Fuck, just fucking whatever. The same thing with me. It's like, am I going to get over it? I accept it, but it doesn't mean I accept it as in like I agree with it. Still going to disagree. I mean, that's in human nature. I'm competitive as fuck. And if he beat me, he beat me, man. But at the end of the day, I don't think he did. But whatever. But he definitely beat a Sunstyle. Best of them. Looked really good in that fight, too. And it's interesting how much more popular Petr Yan is in comparison to Corey Sandhagen. And Sandhagen actually beat a higher profile guy. And I would say even two people in John Lineker, and then beating Rafael Sunstyle, where Petr Yan has only beaten Rivera, Dotson, and Uriah Faber. Those are pretty high profile names, though, I guess. But in terms of beating those guys when they were in the top of the upper echelon of the division, it's a little different. But things are getting a little wacky, so whatever. But long story short, I'm hoping I can get the fight with Petr Yan. That's what I'm gunning for. That's what I'm hoping for. I think that would be the most fun fight to make. And I think it'd be two young guys. Petr Yan being about 4 years younger than myself. And he has a never say die, never quit attitude. And I bring the volume, I bring the pace, and I bring the funk. So I would just like to mix it up with that guy, because I would like to shut it down and let people know, like, this is this your king? And shut him down for the people. But other than that, let's get in. Oh, super nice people out in Raleigh, by the way. North Carolina is full of nice people. And that was one of the things that my best friend and I, Enoch and I, were talking about. It's just like how much nicer people are. And we were driving around looking at properties, driving through areas that he's interested in, looking at some cul-de-sacs. I was like, dude, man, there's a lot of land out here. And the price point, some of those houses, vaulted ceilings and stuff, you could tell it's a vaulted ceiling from the outside. I'm pretty sure just the way the structure of the outside looks, and probably in the kitchen, the living room is probably some vaulted ceilings. The houses out there that would be, for whatever price they are, I mean, I didn't look it up exact like yet, but he told me what he sold those houses going for. Those houses would easily be $1 million homes out here in Long Island. Easily. Now out there, they're about half the price, a little less than half the price, which is insane. And then the property taxes, where our property taxes are anywhere from like $6,000 to... I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, I've heard people even have like $100,000 property taxes. Those are obviously the $1 million homes. But I mean, the areas like two towns over from me in Syosset, which would be two towns, like three towns over from me in Syosset, would be about $30,000 property taxes, $20,000 property taxes, $40,000 property taxes. So when you're in that range and you're looking at other areas like that, where my friend Enoch is telling me that property taxes are only like $1,200, $1,500. I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? That would cut my mortgage in half. I'm paying about $10 where I live now. And my mom's house that I bought for her, that one is about $8,000, $8,500. So it's very interesting, this whole real estate landscape. And I love it. I'm actually helping my friend right now try to find a house. I got to put in a phone call right after this and try to do a conference call and ask a couple of tough questions, because he is very interested in the house. He wants to put an offer in, and I'm going to get that taken care of. But all right, let's get into this card, UFC Raleigh. Fun card, I think. Even though there were a bunch of decisions, I still think there were some competitive matchups. Some sleepers for sure, but I'm a fight fan, so I enjoy the fights regardless. There were some that There were some people sitting with us that were saying, if there was, because they had kids that were sitting in the front row, and they were saying, this fight's boring. And the dad or the whatever he was to them, the guardian, was like, if there's a time to go to the bathroom, it's right now. It's definitely this fight. You're not going to miss anything. Sure enough, he was right. And I actually took him up on that. And he was right. I didn't miss anything. It was the same thing over and over and over. I'll let you guys figure it out who those people were. One fight that stuck out to me was first round TKO. Yep, Herbert Burns, brother of Gilbert Burns in the UFC, gets a knockout first round. About 2 minutes 43 seconds in, dude, this guy looked phenomenal. He almost submitted him early on. I think it was a Darce choke. I thought he might have burned his arms out. His opponent Nate Landwehr gets up. He's trying to push the pace. He's pushing him against the cage. It looks like he's having some success. And then eventually he runs in. Herbert Burns grabs his head, pulls him down into a beautiful Thai plum knee, drops him, follows up, and that fight's over. And it was sad at a point, because he was getting up and you see him in his side. He's shadow boxing. He's warming up. He's like bouncing in place. And he's getting ready to go. He's staring at his opponent in Burns, thinking that he's about to go across the cage. And then someone walked over. I think it was his coach or his corner, one of his cornermen. And they said something to him. And then he looks. And I'm like, my God, I can only imagine what that feels like. I mean, I've been there once. I don't remember any of that shit. He's not going to remember that. And I think he's probably a little still delirious and concussed, obviously. That was a vicious knee, you know. So he took a lot of damage in that. And with that being said, man, that I don't know. That always bothers me when I see a guy like that in that type of state of mind. Not really there, but they're there clearly. And they're saying and doing things that they wouldn't if they weren't crushed with a different attack. But it is what it is, man. It happens. And it's all part of the game. But you live and you learn. Hopefully that kid bounces back in a big way himself. This fight. Now, wait, before we even do that, let me just run through the card a couple ones. The Sarah McMahon, Lena Landsberg, unanimous decision, 30-27, 30-26, 30-25. Same thing with McMahon. I always say I feel like she's so gifted, so talented. Got a lot of wrestling accolades. I think silver medalist in wrestling in the Olympics. And time and time again, I just feel like there's so much more that she can do and bring to the table, but we never... See, I will say she did look improved in the striking for the few strikes that I did see her throw. But on the ground, I just feel like she could push the pace and press the issue a little bit more to really try to get her opponents out of there and get back on that run of what she was on before to get her that title shot again. But you never know, man. Some people, you know, they're content with what they're doing, and if that's your thing, that's your thing. But I can see the potential there, and it's up to her whether or not she wants to open up. Obviously, she's a little bit older, so... They always say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I've seen some people make some changes in the game at a later age. So maybe she can, maybe she can't, but that's ultimately up to her. Montel Jackson versus Felipe Calares, unanimous decision, 30-26, two times, and 30-25. Great fight. His opponent, I don't know what his chin was made out of, but he had him against the cage a couple of times. I was like, boy, you that boy eating some mean, nasty uppercuts. At some point, I'm hoping that this guy would just go down for his career sake in terms of longevity. I'm like, dude, it doesn't seem like you're really offering much offense. You're just taking a beating, and you're not offering much defense either. There were some points where he was just trying to throw stuff. I was like... Yeah, you're done. You could tell you're done. You don't really have anything left in the tank. And Jackson looked like he might have punched himself out a little bit because he starts to slow down from the pop that he had in that first round and in that first initial burst that he had when he had him against the cage. Very dominant fight. He looked good. I'm going to be... This guy's also 5'11", I think, with a 75-inch reach. I'm 71. I'm already considered long for my weight class. He fights at my weight class, 135. He's got super fucking long arms. 75 inches? 7.5 and a half? That's insane. It's like welterweight status. Justin Kish got a big ovation out there, 30-27, three times over Lucy Pudilova. Thought she was going to get the finish, but... One thing she did that was interesting to me, she kept sticking her tongue out. So she's circling. She's doing a whole lot of herky-jerky movements, trying to, like, just disrupt the rhythm and not really give any beat on what she's trying to do. And she sticks her tongue out, and she, like, licks her lips, and then she'll circle again. They'll get into an exchange, and it's like right when she's about to go, she's got her hands up. Her fingers are like, spread open. She sticks her tongue out again. She licks her lip, and then she tries to strike, or she's getting strikes thrown at her, and she circles. It was very interesting. I pointed it out in the first round. I was like, yo, bro, is it me or does she keep sticking her tongue out? And he looked. He was like, yo, bro, I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, she keeps doing it. It was pretty funny. Arnold Allen, very dominant. He looked great against Nick Lentz. I do think that it's like his seventh decision in a row. Seven-fight win streak. And he looked phenomenal. His jab was on point, on par, landing the 1-2s when the opportunity presented itself. But same thing with him. He's got to really figure out. I know he said in his interview it's hard to put these guys away. It is. But it's only going to get harder. So if you can't figure out how to put these guys away in the early beginnings of your UFC career to build up some interest, get some highlights, highlight finishes, I should say, so that... The UFC, as you know, they're always going to use these highlights to try to push and build the fighter. So he's got to figure something out to get that really going. Because if he doesn't, it's going to make it tougher for himself to really get those marquee fights that he wants. He's going to be stuck in that pack until he shows like, yo, I'm here and I'm ready. But I mean, they can only deny you for so long. They can only deny you for so long before they got to just give you a top five, top 10 guy. Now, going backwards, Brett Johns versus Tony Gravely, submission third round, Brett Johns and Gravely win fight of the night. Great fight, back and forth. Gravely, when he walks out, I'm sitting cage side, and I'm like, he looks like the much smaller man And I asked my friend, I'm like, yo, E, do I look like that when I work out? Because I know when I cut weight, you obviously get smaller, you're ripped and whatnot, but I'm thinking, like, this guy just looks like he probably belongs at the flyweight division, 125, 5'5", kind of reminds me of a Henry Cejudo, maybe a little bit taller than Henry, but super stocky in the back. But he still overall looks smaller than Brett Johns, like clearly the smaller man. But you know what, man? He brought a great pace. He brought a lot of experience. He came to the Octagon 19-5 record, Virginia wrestler. I think he wrestled D1 or something like that as well. But, you know, a tough dude. He went back and forth fight. He did some good things. And Brett did some good things. I think Brett's boxing looked a bit better. Slipping and ripping. But the one thing I will say, it was a little bit sloppy in the first and the second round from both guys. And this is where the experience, I think, of Brett Johns starts to show. I think the third round, he made that adjustment. Once he got on top, he maintained that back control position, figured forward the body. And once he did that, he locked himself in, backpacked Gravely, and did not give Gravely a chance to get out. And I think that was the smartest thing that he could have done, because when he was just trying to put the hooks in, he was going double underhooks. Gravely would tripod up, or he would just shake him a little bit, and Brett Johns is flying over the top. Time and time again, I'm like, dude, you keep losing this position, giving this kid a chance to stay in the fight and making it more competitive than it probably feels for him while he's in there, if that makes sense. So I've been in that position where you go wild style. It kind of reminds me of Marab when he fought Frankie Saenz, and he fought Frankie Saenz with the fucking flu and still went 3 rounds hard. And I think set the record for takedowns in a fight with like 17 or some shit like that. But whatever. And then he fought Ricky Simon. Same thing. Went guns blazing, taking him down, pushing a ridiculous pace. And then we had to like teach him, like, bro, you have to slow down. You want to just go, because he trains so hard. We call him the machine for a fucking reason. He gets so pent up with all this energy. And then when he goes out there, he just wants to fucking go and release and just go nuts. So same thing with Brett Johns. He's not going nuts, but he gets to his positions and he jumps to it. And instead of him settling and holding the position and taking his time, he kind of forced the issue a little bit. Now, when he did get him down and flattened him out, I think, in the first or second round also. But the third round, he did it again, started landing some really nice shots, figured for the body, flattened him out, teeing up on him. It looked like he was going to get the TKO finish. Gravely sits up. Brett Johns sinks in the rear neck choke after a couple more punches to the head, sneaks it in there, locks it up. Gravely could have probably defended the hand, but at that point, he's probably beaten up, tired, exhausted, and for him to figure out where the hand is at that moment, because the hand was right still on the head. It wasn't behind the neck, which is one of the hardest ways to ever get out. It's almost impossible to get out. You got to get your hand behind there, pull it out, and hopefully you don't pass out in the process of doing that, because it is a blood choke. So if you cut off the carotid arteries the right way with the right amount of pressure, it only takes about 6-7 seconds for a motherfucker to go to sleep. So great fight, and I appreciate the respect that Brett gave me, and he said that I pushed him. I was very intrigued by that, because I would have thought that he would have said the Pedro fight, but I talked to them in the back room at the Fighter Hotel, and we spoke, chopped it up, and they were explaining to me that, like, when they went back and watched the tape, like, everything in the fight with myself and Brett, I shut everything down, as opposed to the Pedro fight. He was in the fight with Pedro. He hurt Pedro a couple times. It was a little bit back and forth until he got dropped with those front kicks and the calf kicks. But the fight with him and myself, he said that was a little bit different, because everything that they tried, I had an answer for, and I shut everything down. They couldn't even get going whatsoever. And that's when he was still on the feet, and they thought they were going to come in and kind of just put a couple on me and probably get me out of there after me being knocked out by Moraes. But we show them different. So they put a little respect on the name, and I appreciate that. That's love. And I said the same thing to him, as you were one of the toughest guys I fought, and I had to make sure I did my homework, because I knew coming in his confidence was going to be on an all-time high, and I had to make sure right out of the gate I let him know, like, yo, I'm still the veteran here, and you need to, I'm still the veteran, still the OG. Not really the OG, but the veteran of the game right now in comparison to you. And it's almost like a respect your elders kind of thing, but everything you could do, I can do better. that was my mentality going into that. So I had to just make sure I stayed focused the entire time. But man, he came out and looked great in this fight. Like I said, a little sloppy at some points, but overall, in terms of the mental approach, the technique, the technical stuff that he did do correct, it looked great. There's only a few spots where if he did fight a guy who was more experienced than Gravely, maybe he gets that one reversal and he holds him in that position instead of forcing the issue. But Brett did a great job. Just keep getting back up to his feet. So who knows? Maybe against a higher level grappler, he still ends up doing the same exact thing, getting back up and not being held down in that regards. But again, you do that against a seasoned guy like myself or a Sun Tzu, a strong wrestler like Sayudo or somebody. Sayudo's not really a BJJ guy in terms of positioning, though. Maybe even TJ or Cruz. You might get stuck down there. You never know. You really never know. But like I said, Brett did a great job of getting back to his feet. Now, Bayvon Lewis, a lot of people call him John Jones because he trains with John Jones. He gets a decision win, 30-27. He fought two chains. I was like, yo, this looks like Pulp Fiction, Samuel Jackson versus Two Chains or Larry Fitzgerald, whoever you want to call him. Good fight. Now, the main card, Jamahal Hill, he gets a 29-27 win. All three judges' scorecards. Great fight. Definitely green. For sure. But his walkout song was phenomenal. We were saying that we're going to just call him Bop from now on. Bop. Because he came out to Bop the Baby. I needed some shit with some bop in it. Fire song. Had the whole arena bumping, grooving. At least everyone who knew. I think down south a lot of those guys know it. Because I think he's from around the area. But good fight. Angela Hill, good fight with her. Hannah Cyphers. Second round TKO. She got her mounted. Once she got her down to the ground, Cyphers looked like she had no answer whatsoever. She looked lost out there on the ground. Didn't really do much of elbow escaping. I was talking to my friend, and there was another guy because Gilbert Burns at this point is now sitting next to us with one of his other Brazilian friends. And I said, it was like, man, she's not going to get out. She's not doing anything with her legs. It just looks like her legs just look like dead fish out on, not even dead fish, like fresh fish out on land, just like flopping around, dead, not really, you know, just getting to that point where it's going to flatline. So you need to start moving your lower body in order to escape, in order to do the right things to get back to your feet, get to half guard, anything to just improve your position. She did not do that whatsoever. It was very, very tough to watch because she was taking some elbows. She's taking a lot of big ground and pound. I will say the control of Angela Hill looked way better than I've seen in the past. Because I remember before she was on the Ultimate Fighter, she was just a Muay Thai girl who had no ground game pretty much whatsoever. So to see the leaps and bounds of improvements that she made, she even said it in the interview, she called it, she's seen holes where she could probably exploit against Cyphers in the ground department. And Cyphers got a huge ovation from down there. I believe she's from North Carolina. So it was a great fight. Competitive on the feet. One thing is really weird. Cyphers always looks like she's like ready to shed a tear when she walks out and when she gets in the cage. Kind of reminds me of Carla Esparza a little bit. Very, very, very odd. The guys next to me said the same thing. As like they said to me, they go, it looks like she wants to cry, bro. It looks like she wants to cry, bro. I don't know. I was like, yeah, she looks like that all the time that I've seen her fighting the Octagon. But whatever. Angela takes it down eventually, gets the full mount, does the right thing, lands some strike. I was saying Cyphers could just give up her back for a split second, keep the chin tuck, and then try to re-roll and try to push the knee line to get to half guard. So you give up your back so the person on top has to follow and has to float. They could try to strike, but if they try to strike, they also open themselves up to allowing the bottom person to escape position. But if they do land a significant elbow, like right on the temple that fucks you up, it can be pretty goddamn bad. So either way, you're going to get fucked up or eat some shots in that position. But try to get the fuck out. Try to get the fuck out. Real quick, this podcast today is brought to you guys by Manscaped. We got the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. Ooh, go get you some. What else is in the magic box? We got the foot duster. Go check these guys out. Use my discount code FUNKMASTER at manscaped.com. We got the crop reviver. So whenever you're having a long day, if you got this in your purse, it's kind of like Frank's Red Hot, right? So if you have this in your purse or your purse, hopefully your men are not carrying around purses unless you're into that thing. If that's on you, that's on you. But hopefully you can carry this in like your backpack or your pocket, book bag, whatever you're doing. If you're taking it to the gym, boom, 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 squirt, squirt, squirt. Couple of squirts keeps the funk away. And obviously we have the crop preserver. Crop preserver. So after you get out of the shower, you let it dry, you put it on. And so it's kind of like a, we call this almost like a ball deodorant. It is actually, yeah, this is the ball deodorant, active pH control. So after you get out of the shower, I use this, wash it up in the hands, rub it on there, let it air dry for a couple of seconds. Once you do that, then you're good. And of course, we have the hand and body wash. Check this shit out. Check it out. It smells good too. And one of my favorites, we got the refined cologne from Manscaped. And this is what we have in the box. So now, use your discount code FUNKMASTER to get yourself 20% off. I'm telling you, you guys will love this. You will love this and your balls will thank you. Manscaped 3.0. We're upgrading. And it's waterproof. Now, we have Alex Perez. He decisions Espinoza. Arm triangle, round one, from the half guard. That's a ridiculous squeeze. Now, people aren't making fun of Jordan Espinoza the same way they did Sage Northcutt. Why? Because people are haters. Sage Northcutt, the pretty boy, model fighter. A lot of people don't really respect him as a fighter, so they see him get choked out like that, and they're like, oh, he's a quitter, he's not tough, and blah, blah, blah. He's always got excuses. He was sick that day as well. But it is very, very possible to get choked out from that position. If you have a good enough squeeze, I've done it before. I just never got to do it in a fight. But I've done it before in practice, and that was pretty fucking impressive. I like to see how Alex Perez has bounced back, especially after he fought Joey two times, Benavidez. Wasn't the greatest showing, especially getting such a huge bump up in name value and a marquee name and a guy who is ranked. And he kind of shit the bed. I mean, this happens. Sometimes you're not ready yet. And I think that was probably a huge learning curve for him. So now he looked great, man. He looked really good against Jordan Espinoza. He did his thing and got the win. Michael Chiesa versus Rafael Dos Anjos. This was a good competitive fight. One of the things I said in the very beginning was a tough one to call. I did bet Curtis Blaydes. I didn't bet, like officially bet, but I did bet Curtis Blaydes and Michael Chiesa to win. And the reason I said this, I said Michael Chiesa, he's the bigger man. RDA has the better striking, but Chiesa knows his strengths. He does a good job of getting those double underhooks, taking guys down, dragging them to the mat, and stifling them, getting on their back, or just maintaining control. And that's exactly what he did. RDA needed to keep that fight standing at all costs, but it looked like Chiesa was the bigger guy. Now, remember, these guys are both 55ers coming up to 170 and fighting. This is Chiesa's third win in a row. He called out Colby Covington. Big call out. Interesting fight. I think Kobe's striking is probably better than, or should I say more effective to get in the fight where he wants than Chiesa. But I think Chiesa's jiu-jitsu might be better than Colby Covington's. But what can he do off of his back against Kobe? It's going to be a very interesting fight if the fight does come to fruition. RDA, I don't know, he didn't look like he had too many answers for Chiesa. Chiesa didn't really throw any fucking punches, though. That's the only thing. If there was one critique I could give him, and without being, like, constructive criticism, it would definitely be, if you want to fight those upper echelon guys, that's why the Kobe fight is good, because Kobe's not a big puncher. But if he runs into one of those guys like a Sint, Ponzinibbio, maybe a Wonder Boy who could keep the distance and keep him off of him. Maybe Tyron Woodley, strong wrestler who hits hard. He might have some problems with those guys. Leon Edwards, a bigger guy who's pretty well-rounded everywhere. He needs to make sure at some point, some way, he has to figure out how to have some type of decent striking that's going to be efficient enough to get the fight where he wants it to be in the clinch, looking for takedowns against the cage, making an ugly, gritty fight, the fights that he likes to win, that favors Mike Chiesa. Now, he's got to make those adjustments eventually. So we'll see if he's going to do that, because I don't know what's going to be next for him. It's obviously too quick too soon to say, but I do like the fight with Colby Covington. It'll be a big step down, especially coming off of a title fight. And that was neck and neck all the way until the fifth round. I don't know if that fight will happen, but if he does get anybody in the top 10, it's going to be very, very interesting, because that weight class is so deep right now. It's fun. There's a lot of guys on win streaks. There's a lot of matchups to be made. So we'll see what's next for Chiesa. But I just know he needs to tune up something and make some type of changes in his skill set to make him more of a dangerous threat. And I would be okay with that performance if he was making subtle improvements time and time again with each fight. But I would say a lot of it is still staying relatively the same. Like, we're not seeing a lot of changes in the wrinkles of his game. If you guys feels what I'm putting downs. But I like Chiesa. He's come down to train with us. Like I said, he's a strong freaking grappler. Really good dude. I thought that was going to be the difference. I didn't think either one of those guys were going to get submitted in that fight. And like I said, Chiesa didn't throw much strikes. So you could almost make the argument that RDA won some rounds via... won some rounds. Could have won a round just via the striking. Like, the first round was really close. But... still a unanimous decision for Michael Chiesa. RDA, he says people are calling him the gatekeeper. That's what I kind of said. You know, he's winning and he's losing. He's winning and he's losing, which is not a bad thing. You're still getting paid. You're still being able to provide for your family, which is important. You're still getting wins in the biggest promotion. And if something does break and he can put together another streak, he will be back in that title talk conversation once again. I just think he's a little bit small for the weight, to be completely honest. Now, the main event, Curtis Blaydes versus Junior Dos Santos. Second round TKO, 1 minute, 6 seconds in. Now, someone said they see Blaydes winning. I said I see Blaydes winning. They called a KO in the first round. I think they said first round. I said, I can see Blaydes winning in the first round if he could get a takedown, advanced position, and land some devastating ground and pound. Would I had said KO? No fucking way. I'm like, yeah, like, Curtis Blaydes has gotten better with the striking, but I did not think you've seen those wrinkles in his game to be like, yes, I can see him being able to capitalize on a position against the striker in Junior Dos Santos. Now, that finish was a game of inches. And we were talking about this with my manager, because we have the same managers at Balanji Group. Very interesting, because had JDS thrown that uppercut a little bit sooner, he lands and maybe he puts Curtis Blaydes down instead of Curtis Blaydes putting him down. Blaydes throws the uppercut and beats JDS up. Wow. JDS throws the uppercut and Curtis Blaydes throws the overhand right and beats JDS's uppercut and sits him down and follows up and gets the finish. In a very, very big way. Now, that's a big statement for him to make, especially coming off that loss a couple of fights ago to Ngannou. That says a lot. It says he's working on his striking. It says he's working on his hands. And I think it puts the rest of the guys in that division on notice that he's not just a wrestler. He can crack and he can sit down on some of those punches. And if he lands, he can hurt you. And JDS did look like the more physically imposing man in there. But obviously, that doesn't always matter. We've seen that time and time again. The more physical specimen you are doesn't always equate to you being the better fighter with this better skill set. You probably hit hard if you not use those muscles. But other than that, that doesn't mean you are necessarily the better fighter. Now, he never really got the fight to the ground. But the fact that he was able to stand there and, I don't want to say trade, but he was able to outstrike... It's really, I don't want to, you know, it's kind of unfair to say he outstruck him. He did just land one and he caught him. And it's one of those things, man. You should have zagged and game of inches. A guy gets the strike landed before you and that's all she wrote. So a very, very interesting fight. I don't know what's going to happen because Ngannou beat him twice now. You can't really give him the title shot to Stipe, I don't think. And Ngannou's not getting the title shot with the rematch against Stipe yet. He has to fight Jair Rosenstruck. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen for Curtis Blaydes. Who else is there for him to fight? I do believe he's one of the top guys in the division. I think coming into the fight, what was he ranked? I should have this here. I should have this here, but guess what? I don't. Whatever. I think he was ranked third or fourth, though, if I remember correctly. But it is what it is. Either way, super good fight, man. I was super pumped about that. And I was happy for him because we've hung out a couple times. I do believe he has like a slight speech impediment. And he has a daughter. He's a super nice guy. So I got to hang out with him, got to bond with him, got to meet. Got to see who Curtis Blaydes really is outside of the cage. So that was really cool for us. We hung out in Philly at one of the games at the Xfinity Live, whatever it's called. And he has a very interesting story. So to see a guy like that shine, get to the top, and see the success he's having is really, really cool to see. He's a down-to-earth guy, man. Super chill dude. Likes to hang out, have a good time, and just like any other guy. You know, he's a guy's guy, I would say. But other than that, I think we have some interesting, what's the next fight card coming up? Oh, we have this week coming up. This one is going to be off, so I'll be in PA. Then the next weekend, we have Damian Nelson fighting out here in Long Island. That's going to be at the Space Theater, so I'm going to make a trip out to that. So we got a very active month. Then after that, we have Marab out in New Mexico. I'm going to be out in New Mexico for his fight in Albuquerque against Casey Kinney. And February 21st, we have Dennis Bazookia, we have Diana, we have Edwin Smart, we have Lauren, I think. I think if that fight should still be on, I think. And Ryan Petrovich. And I think there's one more person who's fighting on that card out of Ring of Combat in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And then the day after, Al and I flying out to Oregon to get ready for his competition against Mike Perry at Submission Grappling for Chael Sonnen. So super busy month for us, but this week coming up is going to be off for the UFC. And then the following week is going to be John Jones versus Dominic Reyes. That's a big card. So I'm super excited for that. And I'm not going to try and make the trip. I can't. There's no way because I got to go to, yeah, there's no way that even lines up because I'm going to go to our guys' fight. So we got a super busy month. What am I talking about? I'm over here contradicting myself. The fuck is wrong with me? But super pumped up about that fight. Dominic Reyes thinks he's the guy for this. He thinks he's the one to do it. We're going to find out soon in 2 weeks. In 2 motherfucking weeks. Quick shout out to Sergio fucking Pettis. Wow. He looked good. First round submission. Choked the guy unconscious, but dude, he landed. He dropped his opponent and Alfred landed some follow-up shots where he was saying, and he was screaming it, yelling it. You could hear it through the TV. Pummeled his opponent and hurt him pretty good. And then he jumped on that guillotine, trapped his arm, and there was no way for that guy to even tap. That guy was done. And he had to tell the ref, like, yo, he was fucking out. And who knows how long he was out for, but that kid was done. But great fight, great performance. And ESPN MMA, they posted on IG that Sergio Pettis snapped. I'm like, yo, he did more than snap. He snapped and showed some motherfucking teeth. That's a big way to make a debut when you get released from the biggest promotion to show, like, you guys might have jumped the gun and might have fucked up, and it looked like it motivated him. So hopefully we see more out of Sergio Pettis at the bantamweight division and see if he can really, really keep that streak going and turn some more heads. Other than that, man, if you guys got any comments, anything, any suggestions or anything you want to talk about, I got to do some new technique stuff for you guys. I forgot what people were telling me that they want to see. So I'm going to show some more technique stuff, videos for you guys. And remember, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or spinning backfist, baby. I wanted to say something else. I don't know. Drop a comment, like, subscribe. I see you guys later. I'm about to head out to the city and I got to make some phone calls for the house for my boy. So we're going to go take care of that. I'll see you guys later. Peace. And remember, get your Manscaped, man. Well, nah, get your fucking Manscaped. Get your goddamn Manscaped Funkmaster at the checkout. Later.